We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Fans, how you doing? It's your boy John of the Macri with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. I am we're recording this on Tuesday at 5:45. I'm a little out of sorts. One, because as I'm sure Chris Persianen somewhere out there will appreciate, I just woke up from an afternoon nap. I'm not ashamed to say it. It's a reality of life when you become an old man, which I am. And two, my guest today is someone that I talk to, forget every day. I talk to him, I don't know, 8 times a day, 12 times a day.
At a certain point, it's like every hour, it feels like. It's, hey, checking in. Hey, the planning this. This is weird. I'm right there with you, John. This is weird.
It's strange. So if for anybody who doesn't recognize the voice, this is Andrew Claudio, the producer of the Knicks Film School podcast, and also quite a good podcast host in his own right, which we're actually going to talk about for a bit. So hi, Andrew. How are you?
Hi, John. I want to just make it clear that this is because we had a cancellation, and rather than going to find someone last minute, you came up with the idea of, we're going to do a little gimmick, but then you decided to take me all the way out of my comfort zone and said, I'll interview you. I have questions. It's like, oh, okay. I have to let go of the leash a little bit. That is,
you do.
That is something I have to learn how to do anyway. Thank you, my therapist, for that advice. So yes, I'm happy to be here on the Knicks Film School podcast.
You can be happy to be here on the Knicks Film School podcast.
I'm always on the Knicks Film School podcast, just behind the scenes. Now I'm actually like welcomed to the stage.
Welcome to this quite a stage here in the Macri laundry room. You've already thrown me off here. No, but in fairness, we have been going back and forth about doing some kind of a show together, you know, something or another. So this is not like it's completely out of the blue. I want to make that very clear. We're making things clear, but yes, we did have a cancellation, but, so we are, I guess I'll say the gimmick and then we'll try it for a bit before we get to the gimmick. So the gimmick today, we're both very big fans of a particular podcast that has nothing to do with basketball or sports for that matter. The Big Picture podcast on the Ringer podcast network. And they periodically do, top fives. It's a good podcast. If you like movies, I would recommend it. Not that they need my recommendation. God knows. So we're going to do some top fives. We're going to each do our top five questions from now until we left it kind of vague, the summertime, until the leaves start to change, until the
foliage. I believe my definition of this was just like my five biggest questions, like going forward,
fine.
Like, that aren't necessarily, like, who's the point guard going to be? Yeah. Who are they going to draft? It's actually big picture, some minutia questions, some in-depth things. Some are about this season. Some are long-term. But, yes, going forward is how I defined this.
Yeah. So we're going to have some fun with that. But before we get there, let's see. How can I put this? So Andrew Claudio, for those of you who don't know, well, actually, no. This is how I'm going to start this. Because one of the people who don't know is me. Because this is what I was going to say. You ready for this, Andrew? I was going to be like, for those who don't know, Andrew Claudio used to host a podcast with Jeremy, mm-hmm. Jeremy Cohen, who you just heard on this podcast a couple days ago. And then you traveled your way here. And I know how that happened. But I actually, so like, you've moved behind the scenes. And you also had your own podcast in addition to Gotham, Final Score, which I've been a guest on. Or I was a guest on many times, and you peacefully bid adieu to mm-hmm. A few months ago. So I just want to, because let's start here. I know what it means to me to be in front of the mic. As I've spoken about, I don't necessarily love podcasting, like, in its own, like, to me, it's I get to talk about the Knicks. Like, I love writing. Writing's the thing that I love. Podcasting is something that I do, and it's fun. You seemed to have always seemed to me to be someone who genuinely loves being in front of a microphone, and now you are mostly behind the microphone. So what's the deal? Are you like cool being my producer? Like, where are you secretly angsty every time you have to? Are you like loathing doing this job?
I feel like this is a performance review where you're asking me like, are you coming for my job? No.
Are you coming for my job?
Not well. So this is funny. We actually texted the other day because, I mean, you know a little bit about. Personally, what I've gone through, and some of the things that I've had to overcome, just on a personal level. We were joking around that, I guess Jeremy said, maybe Andrew's gonna get back into Knicks content, and I went, no, thank you. I've tried the competing with Knicks film school thing. I'd rather be on your side with this. I enjoy being behind a microphone, talking into a microphone. As much as you believe I do, it is something I have wanted to do my whole life. And, you know, this industry is not easy. So you find your ways in where you can. And as I made it clear on the last episode of Final Score, it's not my last episode ever. I'm not retiring from podcasting. And probably know, there is somebody I'm talking to about collaborating on a project with in the not too distant future. So that could be sooner rather than later. Look, to be behind the scenes, it just takes a lot of ego to be put to the side. I take every time somebody says like, great job, Macri, is, oh, they mean great job us. And that's how I've learned to appreciate what we're doing. I'm here to literally make you look good. It's and sound good, which is the actual thing that I'm thankful for.
I feel fucking bad for you.
The one thing I will say, when we were technically competitors way back in the day, I always knew like I was gonna have you on sound quality, on like the way the pod sounds, like my show would sound better. It was like early on, third, fourth episode, where you went deep dive on some cleaning the glass stats and some like net rating shit that I just never cared about, because it was like, yeah, he was playing defense and then he wasn't, and like that was my whole analysis. And it was okay, he will always have me on the analysis. And then when I was a free agent, I was like, maybe I could make John's sound like top tier, and that's the thing I have the most pride in. So I'm very satisfied with my role.
No, because I for a person to sit and intellectually recognize what it takes to be successful in the role that you're successful in, which is, as you said, to put ego to the side. That's a big difference from actually being able to do it and not letting it seep into, like, you don't ever for one second, there's like not never been an ounce of like resentment towards like me or the fact that I'm like the one in front of the mic, which is crazy to me, because speaking of, you know, imposter syndrome and all that, you're, as I've said to you openly, I'm no better at this than you are. You're just, I mean, you're great in front of a mic. So we don't have to get into this back and forth. But my point is, it's like, it's just interesting to me because I have zero interest in ever producing a podcast. Like, do any of the shit you do? Oh my God. As you can tell, because my production quality was shit.
Oh, so if we could go even more behind the scenes. With
please.
People. When we did the live trade deadline show.
Yeah.
And you had so much fun doing that with Jeremy, where you're interacting. And yeah, we took a break in the middle, but for you, it was like an intermission. If only you knew how much prep and how much time went into setting that up.
I mean, I have an idea.
And just the transitions I was doing throughout, and then my computer crapped out midway through, so we had to restart it. And I was able to make it sound smooth in post, but during the actual live broadcast, it was like, all right, this was a one-time thing. We'll reconvene maybe in the future for a special event. However, more inside baseball, John would like to make every show live if he could. And I'm like, no, you don't get it. There's so much
surprise, Andrew. We're going live right now. That's the welcome listeners and callers.
Yeah. I just got really scared all of a sudden, really sweaty all of a sudden. Look, so if I can make this really personal, and I don't want to get too deep on the Knicks Film School podcast, you know, but
we don't have to go too deep. Yeah, but I
like
do
a
think
little
it's
bit
important.
About my story. Coming out of college, I had an internship at a step stool to what I thought was going to be my dream job. I had a chance to go work in Bristol. And for anybody that knows what big media companies in Bristol, Connecticut, you know what I'm talking about when I say I had the opportunity to go work there. And it got so far to the point where I signed an offer letter and they reported for my first day. And because of a technicality, it got taken away. And I've had multiple experiences like that happen. So as a result, any hint of foot in the door or modicum of success that I'm able to be a part of or be responsible for in this industry, I'm just thankful to still be having a chance to do it, which is why, like, being part of Knicks Film School, just being grateful is the easiest perspective to have rather than resentful.
That's so to me, because I won't put words in your mouth. Me, I've just outright failed at thing and thing and thing after thing over the course of most of my life and thought like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. No, it sucks. A lot of people, I feel like when they experience, you know, failures, they just say, you know, fuck it. And they wither away and that's it. Maybe not New Yorkers. We're a particularly tough brand of folk. But you didn't let it get you down, obviously. And I, you know, that is the one thing I will say for myself is I was talking to the Lord the other night. Maybe it was after, I guess I could say it now because it's going to be out today. After I recorded the putback with Ian.
Ah, when's that coming out?
I think it's coming out today when this pod drops. I didn't spoil anything.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Anyway, and I was like, man, what? I must have been insane to, like, years ago, be like, yeah, I'm going to just get into, you know, media as a 36-year-old man. But no, you didn't let it deter you either, which is why I think we work well together because we just, you know, it's like a couple of audacious idiots who think that they can just, you know.
Well, so even more so. And I don't want this to turn. We do this a lot where it gets.
We do. We're not going to do it. No.
But I'll just say this. The number one thing that I think you and I have agreed to throughout this is like it has to stay fun. Like we're here for jokes. We're kids in a candy store. This can never actually feel like work.
And I'm wearing a Godzilla shirt. Speaking of kids.
I literally put a Godzilla vs. Kong question into the post-game show last night solely so that way this stays fun. And at the end of the day, like what's happening in the world over the last year, fuck, what's happening in Minnesota right now. Yeah.
Right
like,
now.
There's a lot of stuff that could deflate you. So as a result, we're here to take your mind off it a little bit. And that's something I think we've always, I know Jeremy's in on that. I know Chris is in on. I know you're in on that mentality. And I really am just like thankful to be part of the success, let alone responsible for some of it. That is my story. I'm sticking to it. And I cannot wait to fill in again in the future and be uncomfortable with compliments filling in for your shoes. Sorry.
You'll be filling in soon, man, because my paternity leave ends on Sunday.
Leave's over.
Talk about so, not
okay,
fun.
Now I get to do what I intended to do and hijack what? The show for a little bit. Oh, so geez. How are you, John? How are the kids? How is life as a girl dad times two?
Well, I'm going to keep this very quick because I actually do want to talk about some of these because I'm curious.
We can.
It's fine. Life is great. I have two great kids. I mean, I don't know what I should. People say, I have two great kids. Oh, how old are you younger? Yeah, she's 3 weeks old. I don't know. Maybe my younger kid sucks. Who knows? But right now, she's fine. She shits a lot. She doesn't cry that much. She sleeps. She had a lot of pimples. Everybody keeps telling me, oh my gosh, you have a beautiful daughter. I'm like, I don't know.
But the internet's forever, right? They're gonna be able to use YouTube one day and go look up this video.
You will be able to use YouTube.
Can they already?
Scarlett Ray is all over it. There's a kids YouTube that you could. It's a special app that she has on her I can't believe I'm about to say, on her iPad. Dude, this is the world in 2021. It's a frightening fucking place. I love both of my older daughter, Scarlett Ray, is my, 4.5. I say it all the time. She's already smarter than me. And she has another one of a wonderful quality. She's very manipulative, which I think is going to take her very far in life. So I'm very happy about that. She's able to get whatever she wants from us. And it's like, she knows. And I'm like this little, but she's good. She's really good. She's really good.
Do you love them more than Britney Spears?
Yes.
You have a question you need to answer, by the way. Britney Spears or Godzilla?
Oh yeah, so I wore the Godzilla shirt today because I think Godzilla's, you know, I go back longer with Godzilla. So I have to say Godzilla. Okay. Godzilla was my first. I think maybe because I was, you know, like every kid I was obsessed with dinosaurs. I think I might have been obsessed with Godzilla even before I was obsessed with dinosaurs. Which is crazy.
Disrespect to Miss Spears. You know, I mean, who's obviously listening to this podcast right now.
I mean, she's, you know, again, free Britney. she's not really doing much of anything else at the moment. So.
You saw that documentary?
Yeah,
that...
we watched it when it premiered.
Okay. So can we just acknowledge that the guardianship or whatever the thing is called might have saved her career?
Oh, I mean, I don't know.
Yes,
about that.
It seems like she's evolved to the point where she doesn't need it anymore, which gets into the legal side of it and how it might not be good, how it's tough to get out of one of those. But
it is
the point where it picks up, where it takes over her life to where it then, like, she ends up with a Vegas show, makes appearances on How I Met Your Mother, goes on Fallon a bunch of times, is all of a sudden releasing new music and. It's like, all right, I think this might have actually saved your career, but now that you've evolved to the point where you don't need it, you should get out of it. Hashtag free Britney.
No,
the whole story was just interesting.
It's one of the most wild things in the world.
Yes.
Here in the Macri household, we root for Britney. Mostly we root for new music because it's been a little while now.
Yes.
And she's.
I must confess, I still believe.
I'm not talking about a song that has a special place in my heart. Oh, good.
Oh, is that your top Britney? Is it Hit Me Baby One More Time, your number one? Because Oops, I Did It Again was a game changer to 11-year-old Andrew Claudio.
I mean, that I still remember when I first saw that video. I remember
exactly
where I was.
Thank you.
I was I was only like 16, but I was in a bar. And how was I in a bar? Because I was in Italy on an exchange program in high school. Go figure. The red jumpsuit. No, best Britney song. God, it's weird to because I can't just separate. I promise we're getting to Nick's talk in like 30 seconds. I can't separate the nostalgia of the early Britney from the songs themselves. So if you're asking me just about like favorite song, I might have to pick something later, like Radar. Is really-
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big, like,
okay, like toxic?
I'm not as big a toxic guy as some other people. But like, what was the other one on the same album as Radar? A lot of good later stuff. Anyway, okay. Now that I've lost all the all respect of every listener.
No, I love how. Listen, there will be people. There will be a select portion of our listeners that were like, "I've always wanted to hear their thoughts on Britney Spears."
On Britney Spears.
Because I'm leaving all of this in. This is what happens when you get a cancellation, folks.
This is what happens. Okay. Let's just get into it. So we're gonna go from 5 to 1, obviously.
Yes.
How do you want to decide who goes first?
Age before beauty.
So that means me. I go first.
Yes, sir.
It's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my fifth question is, I now you got me worried that mine are going to be boring. I am really fascinated by the Mitch situation, and specifically, I'm fascinated by the situation developing with Mitch and Noel, with Noel's kind of sort of emergence as like, how much of a difference does this really make between Mitchell Robinson and Nerlens Noel? And as I say that, I know there will be a large, not insignificant group of Knicks fans. So to be clear, the question is like, what are they going to do with the situation? Like, is Mitchell Robinson still a long-term priority? I guess would be the way to phrase it. But I do really think it has to do with Nerlens Noel, because while Nerlens Noel is not nearly the talent that Mitchell Robinson is, and while Nerlens Noel is, he's just flatly not the same pick and roll defender he is. He's not as big as Mitch. Like, he gets bodied on the boards. Like, I looked at some numbers today. He can do some stuff that is really, it's good. Like, their turnover rate goes up. I looked at it today. If you go per 36, players in the league who have played at least 1,000 minutes, how many do you think have combined 5 steals and blocks per 36 minutes?
Per 36? Nerlens Noel has 5 steals per 36?
No. Combined between
oh,
your
combined blocks between the two. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Is it like more than 20?
It is a lot less than 20.
Oh, so is it like 5?
It is I'm pulling it up right now. So Nerlens Noel has exactly 5 total. He has 3.7 steals, or sorry, blocks per 36 minutes, or 3.3 blocks per 36 minutes and 1.7 steals per 36 minutes. And again, this is only players who have played over 1,000 minutes. Miles Turner qualifies. He has 4 blocks per 36 and 1 steal per 36. And that is it. The only other players who come close, Rudy Gobert has 3.2 blocks per 36 and 0.6 steals, and Chris Boucher has 3 blocks per 36 and 0.9 steals.
And do you have Mitch's numbers in front of you? Like, what his blocks plus steals were per 36?
With the magic of the internet, I could
pull
them up actually right now.
You need me to filibuster?
No, it's going to take me about, I think this is the filibustering I need. I'm done with the filibustering.
Okay, perfect.
Right now.
There you go.
1.9 blocks per 36, 1.5 steals per 36, which is interesting because he's actually stealing more passes per 36 minutes than Noel. And this goes back to like, wait a minute, Mitchell Robinson is really special. The only reason his blocks are so low is because people don't challenge him at the rim as much.
Darrell Revis, yeah.
Exactly. They know what his deal is. So while I am not trying to say at all that Noel is a better defender, better player than Mitch, I think actually their bigger discrepancies on the offensive end. I think Mitch is a lot better on offense, but like, is he close enough where there is an internal conversation that has to take place, depending, of course, on two things. One, there, and this is why it's a fascinating question to me, with the injury now, I think it adds another layer to this. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was always there is what are the financials that he's seeking? So does his team think like he still is deserving of like a conversation in the Clint Capella category, or are they willing to have a real conversation about like, that's not happening?
You just said Mitchell Robinson's team. Like, I know who's representing him this week, month. God. Like,
I forget who his agent is.
Right. I know it's not Rich Paul anymore. I know it's not Mayar. I genuinely don't know why he can't keep representation, which is why it's tough to really get a read on what you're supposed to do with him. It's obviously a gigantic question for the franchise. I think just me personally, I look at the center position like running backs.
Yes.
They're really replaceable. We got Nerlens Noel and Taj Gibson doing a fine job. I'd rather the lower their usage rate for these centers, the better, in my opinion, which is
why. Can I ask you a running back question?
Yeah.
I know running backs get big contracts. When's the last time one of those huge running back contracts was unequivocally a win for the team that signed it? Because I can't think of one. And I guess it's an unfair question because you could say that something is like, what's the way to judge? Like, is it that the team was better off for having kept the running back even at the money? Or do we have to go with they won a Super Bowl with the running back on the big contract? And that's an answer. I don't think that's happened, right?
Not recently. I think a lot of teams have figured out just how replaceable the position is. You can look at it. Just the last draft the NFL had, one running back got taken, and it was the Chiefs. And one running back in the first round, exactly. Even then, you might have thought, since that running back didn't play in the Super Bowl, and I don't know, a defender, an offensive lineman probably would have helped them out in the Super Bowl come that time. I don't think that team needed to spend a first-round pick. And so as a result, you look at where you're allocating your assets. To bring it back to basketball, if Mitch is fine accepting what's the deal, John? Like I keep going back to it,
and some people think I'm nuts. Offer him the Thomas Bryant contract. Thomas Bryant's a center in Washington. I've mentioned him before. He signed a 3-year, $25 million deal 2 years ago as a coming off his rookie contract. And Thomas Bryant can't defend you or me, but you could put him out there for 25 minutes a game, and that dude can score. He could get you buckets. He could shoot threes. He is a really talented offensive player. Like, when healthy, might be a borderline top 10 offensive center. And that dude's earning $7 million a year. So what, like, what you're going to tell me that, like, Mitch deserves, like, something like double that? No, I'm sorry, no.
I mean, I'd honestly say that's what I'd give Noel, too. So even if you... based off of this season, you know, Noel's agent is going to say, look at the stats.
That's the other part of this is now, you know, Jonathan Wasserman had a tweet about Noel, a graze, but at the same time, there are numbers that show that Noel is maybe not all that in a bag of chips. The defense does fall off when he's out there. They give up about 3 point something more points per 100 possessions. Speaking of cleaning the glass, I looked that up today. So I don't know, but this is why it's a question for me, because there's a lot that goes into it and there's no easy answer. So, all right, your fifth question.
My fifth question. So I'm going to reshuffle a bit, cause I didn't really have an order. I had in level of, this is where my producer brain works, of what would make the show sound great for my last question. Whatever. So I'll go with the fifth question that would make sense in this order. Will Frank really not see any significant minutes the rest of the season? You could probably help me with this, because I've never been the biggest Frank stan. Mm. I've learned to appreciate the decision not to box score scout with him. If all you're doing is looking at box scores, you don't see what he contributes, because a lot of it is guarding the passing lane, so that way a turnover is forced by somebody else. It's shutting down, like, Luka's stat line, or somebody he's guarding stat line might benefit. The hockey assist, where he's setting somebody up to then make another pass to contribute in the offense. I am stunned that Thibodeau couldn't find a role for him on this team. And are we really going to get the rest of the season? And I mean, I'm going to try and not say he who shall not be named that currently starts for this team at point guard, but we're going to get the rest of the season. And Frank is really going to just be an 11th man that plays 1 minute a game when you need a defensive stop, when that defensive stop could have happened in the second quarter, the third quarter. Tibbs clearly sees his value. So that, I mean, it is a question I'm curious about. I guess the bigger question is, so I'll turn this over to you. What's Frank's next team? Maybe not who it will be, but is this going to be a Trevor Ariza situation where he goes to another team and they're going to turn him into a weapon?
Oh man, talk about things that would keep me up at night. If he went somewhere and he was, and I believe he's a guy who can help a team. So then you turn it back to the question you just asked. And for what it's worth, if there's no injury, he's not getting time for the rest of this year. So yeah, that's really happening. You ask yourself, okay, well, why? Why is he not getting time? And then you point to the players that are getting time ahead of him. And if we're not talking about who shall not be named, and we're actually not even going to talk about that position, because they don't see him in that position, and Tibbs likes that position to do certain things. But like, he's boxed out, and I'm not sure he'd be better than the four guys boxing him out, because the four guys boxing him out are RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickly, Reggie Bullock, and Alec Burks. And like, I know, you know, Burks is inconsistent. He's on a little bit of a slump right now. I know Bullock, you know, has had his lulls this year, but like, you look at Reggie Bullock's number, how quick he fires the ball, how much teams have to respect his threat from the outside, his defense. Like, this might be sacrilegious to some people, but I think Reggie Bullock's defense is damn close to Frank's.
I didn't have it as a question, but I'm actually curious what you would keep Reggie Bullock for, because that's a question they're going to have to consider. Is he's not?
What do you bring him back for? I think you could get a guy like him to stay for like $5, $6 million a year.
All right. Sign me up now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just thoughts about Frank that I had it on there. As far as levels of importance, it's probably the least important. Will the 11th man become the 10th man at some point? But well, it's also that jinx of have the Knicks signed a second contract to a guy. RJ being better this year has eased some of those fears, because if it's not going to be Frank, it's going to be him. But
so
I'd like to see Frank.
Talk about spoon feeding your co-host on the pod leads into my number four question.
There you go.
Who I guess you forgot he existed, because he, in my mind, is their 11th man ahead of Frank, is Kevin Knox.
Oh, Kevin Knox. I've always, you want to say I'm not a Frank guy. I've kind of not been a Knox guy from the beginning. So
yeah, but so, okay. We've seen productive minutes from Frank this year, and they have been productive minutes in the way that we have always seen productive minutes from Frank. He's doing the things that he's always done, and he's added some shooting. Kevin Knox, we also, it seems like a million years ago now, we saw productive minutes from him earlier this year. That happened this season.
Yeah, I think if you remember how this season started with every team that wasn't in the bubble, they were all off to hot starts, and these teams that had 3 month off seasons came in out of shape, came in a little worn down. There was some COVID stuff. I don't want to say it was all smoke and mirrors that Knox was able to take advantage of the fact that for a lot of teams, for about 20 teams, the season didn't start until mid-January when they started looking at film. But my question has always been motor with him, which I think has proven this year.
I thought his motor was okay. I never felt this year watching him play that I was seeing a guy who, like, oh, that dude can't survive in a Thibodeau defense. I didn't think he was great. I thought it was okay, you know, but like early on in this, again, if you want to caveat it, that's fine. But like, he had a game this season where he scored 19 points. And it was granted, it was in a loss to Charlotte where they got blown out. Very next game, he came back and he scored 13 points in a game against Brooklyn. There was a game this season where Kevin Knox put up 12 three-pointers and hit five of them. You know, it's like this happened this year. And I think if you were going to map out, like, all right, what's a reasonable expectation for the first 20 games of the season, assuming Kevin Knox plays, I think it wouldn't have been that far away from what we actually saw. And then we haven't seen him since then. So I had heard and reported at the time that the organization still believed in Kevin Knox and valued Kevin Knox and all of that stuff. Where are they at now? That's the question. Where are they at on Kevin Knox? Is he expendable? Is he someone they still believe in? Is he like we don't know. And I'm curious because at this point, like Chris asked on the live stream the other night, he was joking around about, I don't know if he was joking, maybe he was serious, but like throwing in Kevin Knox with like our second round pick to get, I don't know what. And like his salary is almost $6 million for next year. Are we sure some NBA team is going to be like, yes, I want to pay that dude who can't make a rotation for a 500 team, $6 million entering into restricted free agency. I don't know. This is why it's a question.
It is indeed a question. I wonder, I mean, the fact that they went out and got Burks, the fact they went out and got they kept Bullock and Obi being here, to be honest, that's going to create the logjam for Knox because he's Knox's best, the best version of him, I think, is a stretch four. There's going to be a team that buys low on him and says, we'll give you the 25 minutes a night to get your struggles out while we tank. In the same way that Dennis Smith Jr. went to Detroit. And like the best example of this is Markel Fultz going to Orlando and just all of the stress and anxiety of being the number one pick for a contender is gone. You're just straightening out your issues. That I think is the future for Kevin Knox, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably. Is the similar answer, roll forward with Kevin Knox and get what you can for Obi Toppin now. Because think about I'm trading Obi Toppin is not one of the questions.
Stop trading our power forwards, John.
I'm just pointing out, like, imagine they were able to get 90 cents on the dollar for Obi Toppin this offseason, which they're not going to be able to get if you go by the like what his value was, I guess, when they drafted him. Like, I don't think they'd be able to get 50 cents on the dollar if that. So I don't think that's an option, but just in a world where they'd be able to get like 90 cents on the dollar, that would solve a lot of issues because then we got the Randall thing and Knox. Okay. Your fourth question. What is it?
Well, partly why I would not want to trade Obi Toppin is because my next question, Kenny Payne and Johnny Bryant, how long will they remain on this staff? Because I was convinced so I went to DC a couple weekends ago. And while I was there was when Payne was being rumored for a job, Bryant was rumored for a job, and Woody was rumored for a job. And I thought I would come back to New York and all three would be off the Knicks, wondering what that means going forward. My hope with Obi is that a summer, because I keep going back to this, he had 2 weeks between the draft and then preseason. We're talking a guy that didn't play in the tournament, that his last game wasn't even in the A-10 tournament or whatever conference that they're in. It was literally the last regular season college game, and then COVID hit. And you can work out in the gym all you want, but the longest of training camps that he had was 2 weeks with Tibbs and in a culture that was already being put together when Tibbs and crew took over.
And he's been better.
He has been because Derrick Rose is back, I think. That's at least what we would think would be the reasoning. I would like to see him spend an off season with Kenny Payne and just you're in the gym with the big man whisperer that turned Julius Randle into what he is now. And if they're gone, then you might actually have to wonder, well, what is the path for Obi Toppin? Not to give too much credit to assistant coaches, but I really do think the Knicks have assembled a staff that is a game changer. If you look at what the progress Knicks have made on defense, the progress the Knicks have made with turnovers, we have a Knicks team that I'm surprised when they pass 10 turnovers a game, and they don't really have great point guard play, which is why it's so amazing that they do.
I forgot to include I'm going to look up their turnover ratio right now because I forgot to put that in the newsletter the other day with all those stats. Keep going.
So I'm obviously going – I'm, to be honest, going off of just recollection from watching every minute of the games. But it almost seems like they have like five turnovers in the third quarter. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And then they get a little sloppy.
They were horrible early in the year with the turnovers. They were very bad turning the ball over earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. And now
point
they
is,
are 19th, like, so that's a lot. That's a lot better. Yeah,
that is a lot better. I would like to see Kenny Payne and Johnny Bryant here long term. I wonder if off season comes around, if, I mean, is it crazy to say that an NBA job will open up and look at Kenny Payne after what's happened with the Knicks this year?
I don't think Kenny Payne. I think Johnny Bryant's the guy.
Johnny Bryant's the guy.
And I think the only way, my own two cents, I think the way they got Johnny Bryant to, I don't know this. I'm just, to be clear, I'm literally just talking out of my ass. I wonder, not that I think, I wonder if the way they got him to stay around was like, you're going to be the next head coach of the Knicks.
Ooh.
Look, he's the associate.
Are you reporting that? Or is that purely speculation? Okay. Okay.
Don't get me in trouble.
I scared you. I know.
Really? Okay.
That is my next question. I enjoy the fact, like, we talk about infrastructure and culture and all that other, those other buzzwords. Part of that is building out your staff where it's not just the face, but it's everybody that's contributing to winning. And I'm glad that they, even though they lost Woody, it seems like it took a minute, but they haven't skipped a beat. Three wins in a row. They're able to now continue to build on this. Yeah. I wonder if they lose both of those guys, if Tibbs yelling when they're up by 25 is going to fall on some tired ears, you know?
What I swear I just thought of this analogy, and it might be terrible. Losing Woody was like not getting to have dessert after a meal. It's like you don't – it's nice that when you get to have dessert, but it's not really – it doesn't alter like the nutrition of the meal, the satisfaction of the meal, the whole thing. I feel like losing Johnny Bryant and Kenny Payne would have been like you losing your two, like your vegetables on the, and Tibbs is the steak.
You're a writer. You come with these analogies. Well done, sir.
You need your veggies. You need your veggies.
I mean, no, he needs to change his underwear. I like your analogies.
Just a steak. I mean, it doesn't matter how good of a steak it is. If it's just a steak, it's just like, you know, it's just a steak. Okay, now we're moving along. My third question I'm not going to talk about for a lot because I want to save the discussion for an upcoming podcast we have with Jake Rosen coming back on. He will be on next week.
Hi, Jake.
My question is about the draft, and specifically it's something that a lot of people have been asking, and I'm going to ask it because I'm very curious. They're not going to make all these picks and bring in three more rookies into this situation next year. I don't think anybody thinks that's going to happen. So what are you doing? Are you using one of those picks to do a sign and trade with New Orleans for Lonzo Ball? Are you going into this draft with the mindset of like, all right, I'm going to package two of these together and try to move up, or the two first together and move up? I am kind of fascinated with where. So I was listening to the Low Post podcast earlier today. Zach thinks the Mavs are going to finish sixth in the West. And if you look at it right now and how they've been playing, that's not crazy.
Especially when you add in how the Lakers have been playing. Yes.
How the Lakers have been playing, the fact that Portland, and again, I'm stealing from his podcast, but I didn't know this. They have a negative scoring margin, and they are somehow 9 games above 500, which is not a thing that happens. So when you throw all that in, like, I think actually 5 is in play, but let's just say it is 6. There's going to be 3 teams in the East that finish with better record than them. That's it. So that's a 22nd pick in the draft. Which again, I don't, it's very early, and I don't want to, I'm going to save this for with Jake, but like, I've heard like top 20 floated around, like top 15, top 20. Is that pick going to like fall just outside the range where it's going to be as meaningful as it otherwise would have been? That's a question I have. And then obviously if the Knicks, like, fuck man, team's 8th right now. Uh-huh. And they're playing well.
These two picks could be like 17 and 22. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's a good problem to have because your team's not that bad anymore. Yeah.
It's a wonderful problem to have. It's a fantastic problem to have. But if you package them together, where is it getting you? Is it going to get you? These, again, drafts are funny with how they develop, and I'm excited to talk to Jake about it, but like, teams fall in love with guys, even you know, outside the top 5. Some team is going to talk themselves into Jalen Johnson being a 6 you know, nine guy who could run the floor and is super, super athlete and the whole thing. Like some teams going to talk themselves into, you know, Keon from Tennessee. Like some teams talk themselves into players. Are they just going to be sitting there twiddling their thumbs? Like no one wants to take their phone or, you know, respond to their phone call in the way that they want. I don't know. I think that's going to be really interesting to see. And I hope they know what they're doing. I'm sure they do.
This is where even more so Johnny Bryant and this team's ability to develop based off of having 22 and 16 as their picks matter. So my more interesting, at least what I'm more interested in with Dallas, I don't know if you heard this, but I went on Blue Wire's NBA morning show, the Morning Deuce.
I did not get a chance to listen, but I am curious to hear what you're going to say.
So I have a theory about LeBron. I think he wants the Lakers to fall to seventh. I think he wants to come because the only way he has a path to goatness is not amount of titles. It's difficulty of titles. If he has a bubble if he has a bubble title, if he has the Warriors 3-1 title and he wins a ring as the 7 seed where he had to play in the play-in tournament, if you look at how the seeds play out right now, there's a realistic scenario where if they win that play-in and get the 7 seed, they play Utah. And if AD and LeBron are healthy, who are you taking in a best of 7? The Lakers or Utah?
Well, no, well, they would play Phoenix right now unless you think
that's what
Phoenix
I'm saying. They're only a game behind, though. If Phoenix gets the 1 and Utah drops to 2, which the way they've played lately, they literally just have to play 1% less than what they've been playing. And right now, Phoenix has the tiebreaker.
Phoenix has been the best team in the league for 2 months now.
Yes. They're 44-15 in their last, going back to the 8 games in the bubble last year.
I think they started this year. Didn't they start this year 10-10? Or
they were 9-9, and then they went 35-6 over the next 14 games. Yeah.
They do not lose at home, just like Utah hadn't lost at home until, of course, last night as we're recording this. Let's pour one out. In all seriousness, let's pour one out for Jamal Murray.
I tuned in because I got the alert that Steph had 48-3, and I got to watch the Warriors score 13 points in the fourth quarter. Great.
I was watching the game too. Writing.
Like as it happened, I was like, he's not coming back for a while. Point is, them or Utah, are you taking best of 7 if the Lakers are healthy?
No, I'm taking the Lakers.
The second round when they're playing the Clippers. Lakers are healthy. Who are you taking?
Again, I'm taking the Lakers.
Conference final, they're playing the Phoenix Suns if they get there, or Denver if they make it.
And then
they're playing as a 7 seed in the finals against Brooklyn, and then Kyrie decides, I want to take this series off.
Look, Kyrie. I'm going to give you a different answer.
I would still take Brooklyn.
I would take a healthy Brooklyn, but are we ever going to see a healthy Brooklyn? And that's the question. I don't disagree with you, but I think because if you figure it's going to go Utah, Phoenix, LA Clippers as the top three, which at this point I would be kind of shocked if it didn't wind up that way. Then if he does finish with the 7th seed,
they have to go to Phoenix. Unless the
Clippers avoid them. I know I'm taking it a different way than you. I don't think it's nuts to think that they would want to finish. But God, do they really want to play? Like that's who the fuck? It's a play-in game. Anything can happen.
I take them against Memphis. I take them against Golden State.
Obviously, you take them against anybody.
But that's the thing. I really have confidence in them. I think they would rather play Memphis than be the 6th seed and play the Clippers in the first round. Like one game against Memphis, and then you're going to Utah, a team that you've beat in every significant matchup over the last 2 years.
I don't think they fear Phoenix at all. I don't think they fear
Phoenix. Yes.
I don't think they fear. I think they fear Utah more than Phoenix. And the Clipper part of it is fascinating to me because when is it better to play the Clippers? Is it better to play the Clippers? I think Simmons talking about this on his pod the other day. Is it better to play the Clippers in the first round or do you want to wait until the conference final? I don't know. It's How the hell did we get on this topic? What
I told you my more fascinating thing about the West with the Mavs. I think the Mavs are going to get to sixth, which is also what I think LeBron wants. I know we're running a little Mavs over time.
Clippers in the first round. Yeah.
A rematch of last year. I'm telling you, I understand this is Knicks film school, but the Western Conference is very interesting right
now. It's fascinating, and it got less interesting with the Murray injury, although in a certain way with the jockeying, maybe it got more interesting. You could have a situation where we're looking at the matchups and we're thinking that the four best teams are all playing each other and that the four lesser teams are all playing each other. Anyway, your turn, right? It's your
turn. My turn. So I'm going to ask two here because they involve the same player kind of.
Okay.
And plus we're running a little over on time.
Yes.
So my three and two involve one Rowan Alexander Barrett.
Really?
Junior. Yes.
Did not make my list.
So the first one is, can RJ Barrett get to 40% from three? Because I think that actually is a significant milestone with where his career started with. I mean, dude, the stuff I keep hearing about Fizdale and Mills and your rant last night was perfect.
We don't have to talk about it,
but it's proving even more. Like we talked about Kevin Knox earlier. How far back did they set his career? How far back did they set Frank's career? The mismanagement throughout. We only read about RJ. Now just apply it down the roster. Anyway,
and yet there are people who still defend the men that hired that coaching staff.
I mean, hand up, I was when they originally.
No, so was I, but I'm just now today there are still people that just throwing that out there.
I'm glad it seems as if the evidence is showing to the contrary. RJ Sark currently this season, time of recording, is 76 of 201 from three for a little 37.8. Yeah. If he shoots 38 of 85 for the rest of the season, which averages, they have 17 games, it averages to about 5 threes a game going forward, 5 three-point attempts a game. Yeah. So he just has to make 38 of his final 85 ballpark. That gets him to 39.8, which if you round up is 40% for the season. Right. And I can't think of a better way to – I mean, dude, the first 8 games of the season were in – some of us on this podcast were putting him as the fifth best asset on this team. Can I just pause real quick? Like,
sure.
Your take then, as much as I disagree, it was like it's rooted in data. I can't really fault it. Like, it was all backed up by numbers.
It was dismissing the RJ-ness of it all and all the stuff that people – have been saying for over a year now, which is that the work ethic and the dedication and the seriousness and the maturity and all of that stuff. I was basically brushing that to the side and be like, I'm sorry, you can't give me all that stuff when I'm seeing what I'm seeing on the court, which was a mistake by me, obviously.
But the point is, to even add this to Fizdale, not only did I think some of, because I was with you in the sense of like, he's got a long hill to climb or a big hill to climb.
Yeah.
It's also, I think we underestimated just how bad the last year of RJ's life on the court was when comes to the team he was playing for, the coach he was playing for, the regime he was playing for, the Keith Smarts of it all. So I would like to see RJ and his improved shot and the rhythm that he's been on for the past 45 games keep going for the last 17 so he finishes over 40% from three.
I just want to say
jump in.
As the person who had him fifth on that list, I have not a question in the world about RJ Barrett moving forward. He is the last thing I have a question about. And I have to say, reading that article, any lingering thoughts that I had about, he still has these moments, stretches of games where he's throwing off this junk at the rim. And it's like, when is that getting better? And then I read that they have a specific plan to target those specific weaknesses in a systematic fashion moving forward, and Drew Hanlon's track record speaks for it's like I'm in, I'm done, I don't worry about it.
My two questions have to do with the progress he's made, because so I'm thinking, can
question?
He get to 40, and the other one is, can he unseat Julius Randle for most improved player? Because right now, Julius Randle is minus 200. And you know this better than anybody. I think our listeners know. Earlier this season, I put a little hard-earned capital on Julius Randle to win most improved player. I got really good odds. In fact, to be specific, I got plus 5,000. He's now the favorite at minus 200. Then people like John Macri and Ian Bagley and Stephen Bondi have started the campaign of, well, maybe RJ Barrett can do it. No, that's how it starts. Jackie McMullen writes one article, Karl Malone's the MVP. The media floats something out there.
Jackie fucking McMullen.
Yes. Okay, what do I have to say? New York has never started a media storm before? All I'm saying is you guys put it out to the universe. And at first, I was like, wait, no, shut up. Let him win next year's, because some of us would like to see that bet turn into something. But, John, what I forgot and what I'm going to tell our listeners now is that I was, you know, thinking long term back in February when I made that bet on Randle. The rest of the betting slip also included RJ Barrett at plus 10,000.
That's pretty good.
Go ahead, RJ. Go ahead. I don't mind. Go for it, buddy. Progress. Continue.
He's not going to win it.
It's Randle.
I think it was Randle's award to lose. I think it's important that Christian Wood had a long injury. I think that hurts him.
Like, and Jeremy Grant, the fact that his team stinks.
I think it's important. Like, it would be, even NBA guys who are not the most forward-thinking folks, like, you have to acknowledge the fact that he's putting up these numbers in a situation where it's like, just what's going on here? It's Randle's award to lose, and I think he's gonna win it.
Ask two questions now, by the way. Go ahead. What you were gonna say?
I was about to say, it leads into my next question.
Okay, perfect.
Which is about Julius Randle. And the question is something that has been brought up on the pod before, but this has a different slant to it, which is the all NBA question. So I think, and so to update this, as we are recording this right now, Kevin Durant has still played. Actually, no, I think today was his 20. Was it today his 21st game? I think today was his 21st game. Mm. He's still not playing back to backs. So I think at most Kevin Durant is going to play. Yeah, he's played. So no, maybe today was his 22nd game. Sorry, today was his 22nd game. I think at most he's going to probably play 35 games. So he's going to play less than half of the games. I think he should be disqualified
from
all NBA. Anthony Davis similarly is still several weeks away from playing. I think he's going to wind up playing in less than half the games. And he actually wasn't even like his usual Anthony Davis self towards the end before he got injured. I think he should be disqualified. So that means we are now settled on LeBron. I think he's the exception to the rule. I think he's in. Giannis is obvious. Kawhi is obvious. I'm sure there's maybe a case to mount against Paul George. I'm not about to mount it. I think he's in. So then you have Randle competing with Jason Tatum, Zion Williamson, and Jimmy Butler. I think those three guys will get more votes than him. But just, there is a world where the Pelicans fall out of it and Zion is like, his numbers, like, I still think he'd probably get in if he stayed healthy and continued playing games, because his numbers are so obscene. But like, even put him in. Let's say the Knicks finish with a better record than the Heat and the Celtics. Like, is it that insane? Is it that insane to think that he would get it? I think the guy, for him to get voted in over Butler, man, that would be, I don't know about that. So with that caveat in mind, if he got it, that makes him supermax eligible.
Yeah, that's why, as much as I'd love for him to get, for like, yay, Knicks did stuff, I low-key would like him to and miss, because that don't, makes it easy to extend him.
You don't, well, I don't know that he's going to take the extension they could offer him this summer. And we don't need to get into that because we just don't know. But like, I do know this. You can't sign Julius Randle to a Supermax contract. And
I agree.
If he's Supermax eligible, my guess is his agent would tell him, like, this is a game changer. You're not signing any piece of paper this summer, because you could sign another piece of paper that's for double the amount of that money. Or in that neighborhood. So it complicates the situation even more, which is why, like, I'll root for it in a weird way, but at the same time, I'm going to be like, for the sake of, like, if you want Julius Randle here long term, I would be rooting against him making the All-NBA team. I'll just say that.
I will say, because I've been tracking this for a couple months now. Like, I have a notepad where I just have everybody who I think, and I move them up, like, once a week. I'll go look at it. I find it hard to believe that he'll make third team. I think the game that they played at the Garden against the Heat let me know, because anything Jimmy Butler did, he was able to get a call. He was able to get to the line. He got every foul call for him. He got every non-foul call against him. So I think the respect he has in this league, especially after last year in the bubble, voted on by, like, I think the way they're going to reward Julius Randle is by giving him the most improved player. It's the Tibbs argument. And for a while, we thought Tibbs would be the coach of the year, and that's how they would reward the Knicks. And it's like, no, I think Randle being most improved player will be a testament, because the Knicks are the most improved team, which makes sense.
Monty Williams, I think, is now has to be the front runner. I haven't looked at the recent betting odds, but I have to think he's the front runner. The only other thing I'll say is Butler's played in 16 less games, and maybe he can catch up. I think that's, you know.
I legitimately think he's got that LeBron grandfathered in reputation now. The guy went head to head with LeBron last year in the finals, and the league the voters for this noticed.
You're not wrong.
You know?
Okay.
Ask another question.
My last question is just very simple. Like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a more interesting way to phrase this, but just, like, what's going to happen in the playoffs?
That's my last question too.
Yeah.
So we're good.
So, I just, I'm just.
Are you optimistic? Are you optimistic about them winning a play-in game?
If you gave me some play money to put down right now, I think I would say that they're going to make it. I think they're going to be a top six seed.
Whoa. Okay.
Because
that's different.
Because here's why. I know how much they have struggled to score this year. I know, obviously, they were benefiting from opponent shots not going in earlier in the season. I just did a newsletter on the numbers. That's gone, the luck factor. They're average team when it comes to the luck of teams, opponents making threes now. So the defense is real. Mm-hmm. So if the defense is real, and it's like, yes, the schedule doesn't have any patsies down the stretch except for the Rockets game, but it also doesn't have any unwinnable games. And by the way, again, I feel bad saying this, the Denver game actually becomes a little bit more, a little bit more. It's like, would it be that crazy? And then who knows what's going to be going on with the Lakers and the Clippers and who's going to be playing for them. So, like, they can win every game pretty much down the stretch. Two games against Phoenix would be the other ones, but, like, that's 5 out of 17 left. And I think their ability to shoot, the Laker game aside, when they shot 18%, their ability to hit threes now for a little while now, and they're taking good threes and they're generating threes, and it's like, think they could score on some nights, and it's just who's going to get in over them? Because if you look right now, their net rating for the year is 13th. The only teams who have a better net rating than them in the Eastern Conference are the big three, and then Boston and Atlanta. And then you look, and it's like the Heat are way back. So it's basically, to me, they're going to finish with a better record than Charlotte with Charlotte's injuries. So it's a matter of, can they jump either Boston, Miami, or Atlanta? Atlanta's a little banged up. They have the tiebreaker against Atlanta. I don't know.
You're going to make me fucking believe. Jesus. I'm going to actually go into the last 17 games thinking the Knicks are going to – although – okay, so better question. What do you want? Would you want to just go play Milwaukee best of 5, best of 7? You want a shot at Milwaukee.
Yes.
You don't want like a 7-8 against the Celtics where you get to put the beginning of the nail in the coffin of that run and then you get to go to Brooklyn?
I want nothing to do with Brooklyn.
Well, I agree. Like, healthy-wise, but that is a question mark, the health of Brooklyn. And whether we want to admit it or the Knicks have played Brooklyn tight in all three games.
Here's the thing, and didn't we talk about this recently? It all runs together. If you give Tibbs a chance to game plan against I'll probably eat my words when they fucking sweep us 2 months from now, you know, by an average of like 20 points a game. But like, I would like to see what Tibbs comes up with a chance to game plan against Giannis.
Okay.
That's all. I just want to see.
My thought was more like, if they play that team is seven,
three players. Sorry, that team is three players.
It is.
Like, all due respect to the Dante Vincenzos and Bobby Portis's of the world. PJ Tucker's can't get on the court. Like, that team's three players, three guys. So I don't know.
I'd argue if you were doing a draft of both rosters, you take three players off of, well, would Randall go above Drew Holiday or Randall go above Middleton?
Oh gosh.
I don't know. It's relevant. Middleton's
the guy you want in the playoffs. That dude's, he's really good.
So my thought was, from an optimistic standpoint, if they get the seven and more fans are allowed in, and you actually get a real garden crowd for a 7-8 matchup against Boston, and you get the New York-Boston aspect of it, you get like putting the nail in the coffin of this run that they've had over the past 5 years where Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens couldn't do wrong if you asked anybody in the media.
By the way, I think it would be Charlotte or Chicago. I don't think it would be Boston.
So you think Boston would – you're really down on Charlotte. Okay. I know their injuries are bad, but
– Gordon Hayward's going to miss another – I think he's going to miss another 3 weeks.
Okay. So then under this scenario where I'm thinking of this more than as the Knicks being the seven, I want to – because I don't think the Knicks are winning any of those series top three. I want to see them play Brooklyn where Brooklyn doesn't have a home game for a best of seven. I want to see what that looks like.
I mean,
they might win the series. They might get booed off the court every night, but I want to see that.
The Brooklyn thing's interesting because of the health issue, right? And it's like the big three have played, what is it, 140 minutes together this season?
It's like seven games, yeah.
It's seven games, and I think it's like 100, you know. And they're not playing any minutes together anytime soon. Because James Harden, who the fuck knows he's gonna go? It's like there's a very real possibility that that trio sees 10 games of court time together going into the playoffs, and like. I don't know. I just they've really impressed me this year, and I do think for as much as Knicks fans, and I've done this, are like, you know, anybody who thinks the Blake and LaMarcus Aldridge stuff is going to matter in the long run when we're talking about like a finals against the Lakers, like that's a different conversation than can LaMarcus Aldridge make the Knicks' life difficult? Like, yeah, he's still good enough to do that. Blake Griffin even could probably make the Knicks' life difficult in the right and like. You know, say what you want. Like they seem like they're pretty well coached. Whether it's D'Antoni or Steve Nash or whoever. They've guys that could do some stuff. Like Jeff Green, like Joe Harris. Like
don't get me wrong. They're good. Hottest take of the pod. Brooklyn is good, right? I think. <Brooklyn's good. laughs> I think healthy. They're my pick to win it all. I think going to take this full circle. There was an episode of Final Score where. I looked at Brooklyn plus 1,000. I had so many questions, and you were like, those are the best odds. If you want to make a bet, those are the best odds because they have a trade in them. I didn't realize it was going to be for 2018 James Harden, but they had a trade in them. They made it, and then everybody that wanted a ring chase went there to be their bench. So I think if we're placing a bet on any team to win it all, it would be Brooklyn. Yeah. There are still – questions coming up in that first round that I think if the pressure of you do not have a home game in a best of seven against one of the best defensive teams that every single team that plays them, the reputation the Knicks walk away with is that team doesn't stop playing. They guard tight. They close out well. That's just a bitch of a game to play when you play the Knicks. And a team that doesn't like playing defense then gets to play them for a best of seven. I'm not even saying the Knicks win the series. I just want to enjoy that for the week and a half that it would be on.
And of course, I'm sure there are people listening to this right now who are like, you're both idiots. Yeah. The best scenario would be the Knicks get the seven seed, lose a heartbreaker to whoever they play, then lose a heartbreaker in the next game.
I hate it so much. The mentality that the only way you can win is by losing.
Well, hold on. I do want to acknowledge that if that happened, that if they got the seven seed I'll and somehow it, ended yeah. up in the top four of the lottery, that would be the best scenario.
Oh, but we're talking about less than 10% odds in that case. I'd rather the 100% odds that you made the playoffs and your young guys that are progressing this year got to enjoy some playoff basketball and experience.
We'd be talking about, I'll tell you exactly what the odds are. We would be talking about
the best they could finish is 11th. And it
If they were the seventh seed, I think the highest likelihood is that they would have the best record of anyone who went into the lottery. And if they did have the best record of anyone that went into the lottery, they would have a 2.4% chance of moving up. If it went to the 13th best record in the lottery, then that increases to almost an even 5% chance. So, like, you know, it gets bad. And then pretty soon you're talking about it's a 8% chance. And that's like, you know, anyway. All right.
I would rather
not.
This is a successful fill-in pod, by the way. I think we actually got a full pod out of this. Look it
up. As long as people got past the Britney Spears stuff, I think they were rewarded with some good basketball mm-hmm. talk.
You're welcome for leaving it in, by the way, people.
This is going to be fun. Andrew, anything you want to plug or promote?
Would I like to plug something? Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Knicks Film School podcast. If you dig the show, head on over to iTunes and drop a 5-star rating and a review. If you dig John, follow him on Twitter at JCMacryNBA. If you dig the sweatshirt behind him, for those of you watching on YouTube, head on over to the Knicks merch store. There is a pinned tweet on the Knicks Film School Twitter account that has a link to our merch store. You can get it in all sizes from extra small to 4XL. There's a bunch of different patterns too, if you'd like. We have all black. We have logo on gray like John has, and if you like the color of our podcast logo, there's my personal favorite that is logo on royal Knicks blue. You can get a phone case, you can get a coffee mug, you can get a mask, you could get a bunch of stuff that supports the brand. So we appreciate all the contributions you give in the super chat. Here's a way you can contribute and get some swag in return. So head on over to the Knicks merch store. And last but not least, you can check out the Knicks Film School YouTube channel. For those of you watching, thank you for subscribing. Tell your friends, share all of our content. We appreciate all of you for doing so already. John, thank you for having me on the Knicks Film School podcast.
That was a really good plug. You're really good at plugging.
That might be my niche going forward is that you just have me on to do that at the end of every show, or I'll just cut and paste this to the end of every show.
No, it's really good. As I hear my daughter rustling around in the kitchen, which means it is my time to go. I will say thank you. Do all the things that Andrew said, and thank you, Andrew, for coming on. And so funny. And we'll see you for another episode. We have a good one coming up later in the week. Talk a little bit more about the team that plays in a city in Texas that the Knicks are playing soon. So until then, have a good week and we will see you soon.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.